for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. British-American actress Angela Lansbury has won 5 Tony Awards and an honorary Oscar. She also received 18 Emmy nominations for her role as Jessica Fletcher in the TV series Murder, she wrote. In her 7 decades as an actress, she's pretty much done it all. She began her show business career 73 years ago, performing in a cabaret at age 16. She's now back on stage, starring in a revival of Noel Coward's comedy, Blithe Spirit. Angela Lansbury joins me from Toronto, one of the stops on the play's 4-city North American tour. You are always welcome to be part of the program. Give us a call at 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Angela Lansbury, what a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thank you, Diane. This is a singularly exciting event for me because I've listened to you over the years, occasionally in California, and here we are face to face, as it were,
about
on
that.
The telephone.
And I must say, looking at you on Skype, you must have the bluest eyes I've ever seen. They really
I never
are.
I thought of that, but I always thought they were a bit gray, but I'm glad you think they're blue.
Absolutely.
I'd rather be blue than gray.
I know you're in Toronto playing Madame Arcadi in Blithe Spirit. Tell us why you like this role so much. You've appeared in it before.
Yes, I've play. We totted up the number of times I've played Madam, and it comes to around 500 times I've played Madam Arcadi.
Wow.
Between New York, London, and now this tour, which is not a particularly long tour, but a great tour in that it's bringing me to some of the largest cities in the United States, which I had never played it with it before. So, why do I do it? Why? Because I think it's one of the most entertaining roles that I've ever played. And also, it's comedy. And I love to play comedy and don't often get to do it except on stage with things like Sweeney Todd and let me see what else in a comedic range that I played. Anyway, certainly, Madame Arcadi is it. As far as I'm concerned, for me, you know, I really love playing her. She's full of stuff, you know.
And as a matter of fact, you were quoted as saying that you give a very naughty performance as Madame Arcadi.
You could say that, yes. You could say I fall over the edge occasionally, but critics have been kind enough to say that I always manage to retrieve myself just before it goes too far.
You know, you and
the temptation is to go too far, I have to say that.
I just can't believe you would ever do that, but while I was singing your praises and talking about all the awards you've won, you were, and the number of decades you've been out there, you were sort of raising your eyebrows. What is it that keeps you returning to the stage and saying that you won't stop acting before the absolute end?
Simply because it has afforded me the greatest enjoyment as an actress, working on stage with a live audience. There's just no comparison between playing a character on stage and playing a character on a movie set. I had years, as you know, of playing in movies and played some interesting and provocative roles, shall we say, over the years. When I first started out in Hollywood in the 1950s, 60s, and then when I finally made it to New York with MAME, which was a huge musical. Prior to that, of course, I'd done Stephen Sondheim's Anyone Can Whistle. So when I became a singing actress on stage, I was hooked, you know. I thought, this is it. This is what I want to do from here on. And so I did. I stayed with it. And I loved it. I loved the proximity of the audience, the sense and the responses that one gets from an audience are so encouraging and exciting and fun. And you feel you're entertaining people who otherwise might be sitting there, you know, feeling pretty sorry for themselves, because we all go to the theater for one reason or another, and it's generally to perk ourselves up, I think.
And,
you know, we want a new experience, and theater can give it to us.
And what it actually does, it seems you're saying, is to perk you up, give you energy and spark.
Absolutely. Oh, good heavens, yes. I've always said, you know, if you talk about Angela Lansbury, I say, well, she's dull as ditchwater, but fill her up with a good character, and suddenly she becomes quite interesting.
You know, one of the many shows that you've starred in was Gypsy, and I'd like to play a clip of your singing a song from Gypsy.
I had a dream about you, baby. It's gonna come true, baby. They think that we're through, but baby, a bow, honey, everything's coming up roses. Now's your inning.
Talk about that role, Angela, and what it meant to you.
It meant so many different things to me. To follow a woman who I had admired and listened to in my younger years with such excitement and, awe, who was a merman, for me to be asked by the writers, composers, lyricists of Gypsy to recreate this role again years and years later was a tremendous, it was asking a great deal, I think, and I was afraid. I was really quite frightened at the prospect. But because of the encouragement and support that they gave me, Stephen Sondheim, who are all the you can probably fill in all those blanks. My mind is like mud this morning. It's a little bit early. Julie Stein, for goodness sake. Arthur Lawrence, there they are. And it's all coming back to me now. But anyway, this is extraordinary group of great, great people who were there with me. They encouraged me. They said, go for it, you know. And I did. And it worked out. It's a great, great role, marvelously realized.
Everything's coming up, sunshine and Santa Claus. Everything's gonna be bright like Santa Claus. Everything's coming up roses for me and for you.
What is strong voice you had.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was God-given thing that I realized at the time. I didn't realize at the time how it was going to support me in that part. I was worried about it because I didn't know whether it would hold up. I hadn't sung that much prior to... Well, I had sung a good deal, for goodness sakes. Yes, I'd done a couple of huge shows on Broadway over a certainly 1 year, sometimes a two-year period. MAME I did for 2 years. So my voice by that time was really pretty strong, thank goodness, and it didn't let me down, thank goodness.
And the acting part that went along with that just fed exactly where it should have, into your heart, your mind, your soul, and your voice.
Well, thank goodness. Thank you for saying that. That's a lovely thing to know that you feel that way because, you know, it's a long time ago and most people don't even know I ever did it. Certainly not the younger generation.
Angela Lansbury. She is currently in Toronto playing Madame Arcati in the Noel Coward comedy, Blithe Spirit. We'll take just a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk more, hear more music, and your calls. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from America's Natural Gas. Learn how Denver International Airport is committed to lowering emissions by heating its terminal and fueling hundreds of vehicles with natural gas at thinkaboutit.org. From the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education, dedicated to empowering education changemakers across America every day to improve the learning process. Learn more at edutopia.org. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back. If you've just joined us, Angela Lansbury is my guest. She's currently in Toronto playing Madame Arcati in the Noel Coward comedy, Blithe Spirit, which she is taking on a four-city national tour. She'll be here in Washington, D.C. at the National Theater from March 17th to the 29th. And I, for one, certainly plan to be there and hope to meet Angela Lansbury in person. A critic in the Toronto Star wrote, after seeing the play in Los Angeles, he wrote, "As Madame Arcati, the happiest of mediums, she careens around the stage like a jet-propelled dervish, and the crowd goes crazy, cheering every exit and entrance, then leaping to their feet at the end." How do you do that, Angela? How do you do that?
Simply, I'm just... infused with energy when it comes to depicting this lady. She's such a funny, interesting, and crazy person in some senses. But she, the wonderful thing about Madame McCarthy is that she's absolutely dead serious about her work. And her work is as a medium, she is, which enables her to bring the spirits to the fore. And in the process of doing so, she has her own machinations and ways of bringing that about. And this, to me, is great, great fun, because I get to play the fool, in a sense. But as I said, she's absolutely dead serious about her work and what she's achieving and accomplishing. And this is what makes her valid in my book. She's not a crazy lady. She's, as I said, she's absolutely straightforward in what she's doing. And her one idea, she fails sometimes, which makes it very funny, and then other times she wins. She certainly wins through in the end. So for that reason, you can't help but be interested in watching how she's going to bring it about. And her way of doing it, as I say, is quite unique and in some instances ridiculous, I suppose you could say. But nevertheless, it's very entertaining. And I think it quite valid. I hope it's totally valid. I think it is. And, otherwise, I wouldn't do it. You know what I mean?
And so, tell me how you manage to keep in physical shape to be able to do that kind of demanding role.
Good question. It's only recently that I have faced myself the fact that I was a certain age, and up till that time I never thought of age. It never occurred to me that I was 40 or 45 or 50. I always felt 28, you know. And even to this day, they say you're as old as you feel, or is you're as young as you feel. I choose to say I feel as young as I feel. And I never feel old. I never for a moment allow... It's only a question of allowing myself to think old. I have to look at the calendar, and the calendar tells me I'm 89. But that is immaterial as far as I'm concerned, but I have to consider it, but I don't allow it to slow me down in any way that I can possibly avoid it.
So do you maintain a physical training regime?
I take very, very good care of my body, and I'm very careful about what I eat, not to a ridiculous degree. I'm not on any special diet or anything like that. That's awfully boring, because my other love in life is really being a housewife. I love keeping house. So and I love cooking. I don't get to cook a great deal, certainly don't on the road. It's very, very difficult. But, you know, I really love that part of life. I love the part of living and being with family. Family is enormously important to me. It's the only thing that really matters to me is family.
Indeed.
And that really keeps me on my toes and running still, because I want to be around with them. I want to be around with my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. So I take care for all those reasons, not just for being a performer.
So what you're telling me by not telling me is that you do not do any regular physical exercise to keep your body in shape.
Well, you might say that, but on the other hand, let's say that I'm very much aware of keeping my body in shape. I have undergone many operations for hip replacements.
Uh-huh.
I have two hips, I have two knees, and they all work absolutely 100%, and they've never given me a problem. So I'm very fortunate in the fact that I'm not dealing with arthritis, which so many people are of my age. I'm very aware of that, and I feel terribly sad and I hurt for them. And but because I've replaced all these parts, I'm probably better off than a great many people.
Uh-huh.
Because I went ahead and did it when I was quite young. I had to, because if I was going to perform and dance and sing and carry on, I had to be in very firm, firm physical shape.
Angela,
to do.
take us back, if you would, to that very first film role in Gaslight.
Well, that was a curious fluke for me as a young woman. I was 17 years old. I'd come out of one and a half years of drama school between London and New York. I started when I was very, very young. I literally finished my formal education when I was 13 years old. I'm terribly undereducated.
Wow.
And I'm sorry about that. I get in terrible pickles with myself when I think what I missed by not getting a proper education. But I've had a great life, education from life, so I consider I was very fortunate being in the field that I was in, where I got to meet extraordinary people, and I educated myself that way, and also through my work.
But take us back to that first role and what it felt like to play, to first be chosen and then to play the role of that young maid in Gaslight.
It was extraordinary. It really, really was extraordinary. I was super awed by what was being asked of me. But on the other hand, I was an old soul at a very young age. I have to say that. I know that for a fact. And I always felt responsible to deliver the goods. If I was going to be asked to play an important role in a movie with great stars like Charles Boyer and Ingrid Bergman, Joseph Cotten, Dame May Whitty, all those great old names, I had to come up to the post and deliver the goods. As I said.
How were you even chosen? Why were you chosen?
Because I could act the role. I was an actress from the time I was A to a bull's foot. You know, really, from the time I was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I was acting. At school, I was acting. Mm. I'd get laughs at school, playing the fool, and generally always imitating people, voices, accents. I was an absolute mass of make-believe. And it held me in great good stead all of my very young life. So when it came time to, as I say, deliver the goods as Nancy in Gaslight, thanks to my upbringing, my mother, my parents, my grandparents, and all my experience of life that I'd had up to that time, I knew who Nancy was. I knew she was a naughty girl, you know, and she was going to make life good for herself, and she knew how to work this man. He only had to look at her for her to know that she had him by the shorts, as they say. So all of this, I was sophisticated enough at that age, in a good way, I think, not a nasty way.
You know, I watched Murder, She Wrote, through so many episodes, and absolutely adored it. It was so popular, and you were nominated for an Emmy 12 times, but you never won. Is that a bit of a thorn in your side?
Well, it certainly made a mark on my consciousness, let's put it that way. It was interesting to me because what I finally realized over the years was that this was not a popular show on the West Coast. This was the most popular show in every other part of the United States.
Huh.
Every major city, every state. It was enormously popular. It was always the top show of the week. And you say, why didn't I get nominated? I was nominated, but why did I never receive it? There were several other shows at the time that were enormously popular, too. And they just sort of got their foot in the door, and I could never dislodge that foot, and I didn't. So, but it didn't mean it's still playing today, and it's playing twice a day here in Toronto, and it's playing twice a day in London, and twice a day all over the world. So I don't regret not getting an Emmy, but part of me says, gosh, it would have been nice, that's all.
But, you know, here's an email from Chad in Elkhart, Indiana, who says, I am a dedicated Murder, She Wrote fan. I watch it every night before I go to bed. Is there a part of Angela Lansbury in Jessica Fletcher? And if so, what? And would you ever trade jobs with her?
Would I ever trade jobs? I would love to have been a writer, because that's what primarily what she was a writer.
Indeed.
And I think this was the quality that she possessed, which made her so understanding and generous in her ability to appraise and understand human behavior, which also made her a good sleuth. I think that any good police investigator, the more he knows about human nature, the better a policeman he's going to be. And I think she, in her own way, was enabled to do her job, and which was an amateur job. She wasn't a professional, but she was certainly looked highly upon by the police because she was damn good at it. You know,
she was indeed. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Other work you've done in some of the most beloved animated films. There is one that is one of my favorites. It's from Beauty and the Beast.
Tale as old as time, as it can be, barely even friends, then somebody bends unexpectedly. Just a little change, small to say the least, both a little scared, neither one prepared. The Beast, ever just the same, ever a surprise, ever as before, ever just as sure as the sun will rise. Tale as old as time, as old as song, bittersweet and strange, finding you can change, learning you were wrong. Certain as the sun, rising in the east, tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme, Beauty and the Beast. Song as old as rhyme, Beauty and the Beast. Off to the cupboard with you now, Chip. It's past your bedtime. Good night, love.
Don't know about you, Angela, but hearing that brings tears to my eyes.
I know what you mean, and I love the fact that children love it. and remember it and associate it with me, because they don't really know what I look like, but they know my voice. And oftentimes, and I've been quoted as saying this before, but I'll say it again, I've often been in a supermarket and mothers and children will pass me by, and I will say something to my companion, and they'll say, "That's Mrs. Potts."
And the voice is so beautifully delicate and appropriate for that moment.
Well, thank you. That's
just
so
wonderful. All right, we'll take a short break here. When we come back, your turn to ask the questions. Do join us. I look forward to speaking with you.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from CA Technologies, who believes that every business is in the software business. CA Software and Services work to help companies optimize their digital transformation in the application economy. More information is at ca.com. From the Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems, at pewtrusts.org. And from the estate of Miles Gatterman, whose bequest is in appreciation of public radio and its commitment to introducing music to all walks of life.
When Philip Connor's younger brother committed suicide, he couldn't forgive himself for not calling him the night before at his mother's urging.
I wanted to believe that that might have saved him. I couldn't believe, in fact, that it wouldn't have saved him.
On the next Fresh Air, he tells us about investigating the story behind his brother's death. Connor's new memoir is All the Wrong Places. Join us.
Angela Lansbury is with me from Toronto, where she is playing in Noel Coward's comedy, Blithe Spirit. She's taking that on a four-city North America tour. Here's an email from Jillian. Angela, she says, coming from someone of the millennial generation, I just wanted to say, for as long as I can remember, I've always thought Angela Lansbury was one of the most beautiful women. With my grandmother, I absolutely loved watching her on Murder, she wrote. And Angela, I want to ask you about that beauty, because I think that you and I have made similar decisions. You have opted never to have plastic surgery.
Not true.
Not true?
Oh, absolutely not. No, no. Let me see. The first time was when I came back from London. Because by that time, I really needed to get a little help.
Ah.
So I did.
I see.
Can't say that I didn't, because I did at that time, and it's many, many, many years ago. And I have, since then, I've had little tweaks and things around the eyes and stuff like that. Because anybody in our business who's on camera really is forced to consider this option, and it is an option that all women today can avail themselves of, and I see nothing wrong with it. I truly don't. We were all a bit against it in the days of the 1950s, 60s, 70s, but nowadays it's a given, and we grab it when we need to. Otherwise, we would not be able to continue our careers.
And more and more men are doing the same.
I believe it, yes, because it's so much more easily available, and there are new styles and ways of treating the problems to do with skin. So I certainly would encourage anybody who needs to and can, go ahead.
All right. Let's take a call here from Sterling, Kansas. Hello, Ben. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me, and it's a pleasure to talk to you, Ms. Lansbury.
Thank you.
One of my favorite roles was that I've ever heard you do is Mame Dennis, which is clear back in the 60s, but I do a lot of community theater, and I'm wondering who your role models were or are in the acting and the best advice you ever got.
Well, that's a huge loaded question right there. It would be pretty hard for me to be able to pinpoint those three categories. Let's say I've gleaned my inspiration from many musical performers in the days when I was just beginning. Amazingly enough, some of them were British, who you would never have heard of. But certainly, well, let me see. Mary Martin was a great inspiration to me, because she had such a warmth to her voice, and she sang the lyric. She just didn't sing the sound. And to me, that's always been the bottom line, is to sing the lyric and to enhance the music by doing so. Otherwise, it's just a voice throwing out a whole bunch of words. But if you infuse those words with emotion and sing it on the tone with that emotion, the human aspect, then I think you can achieve a good result as a singer in musical theater. Who else? Ethel Merman, obviously. Ethel Merman, truthfully, in the 1950s, was absolutely it. I used to listen to the record of Gypsy over and over again, because it was absolutely staggering to me. And I'd first heard her when she sang in an old movie. She sang a song called "We're Having a Heat Wave, a Tropical Heat Wave," and I'd never heard anything like that. And I was about 11. So I mean, all these sounds, they remained with me. They became part of my list of things that I, wanted to participate and be part of. So a lot of people, but Mary Martin, I'd say, and the lady I just mentioned.
Ethel Merman.
Yeah, Ethel.
All right, let's go to Adam in Utica, New York. You're on the air.
Wow, thank you. Hi, Diane. It's nice to speak with you today.
Thank you.
Ms. Lansbury, it is quite an honor. Ever since I saw you in The Court Jester, you've been one of my favorite actresses ever. I just had a quick point. We just closed out literally on Saturday. No Coward, Lie the Spirit, and the role of Ruth was actually played by a man. His name was Roth, and it played really well. It was really fun to, mess around with that. My part was Dr. Bradman, and you said that you played Madame Arcadi as sort of a naughty sort of character. And what's funny is, in our production, we used Madame Arcadi and Dr. Bradman to play off each other as though they had had an affair prior to the seance. And I was just curious as to, when you say, you playing her naughty, how did you do that? I'm just kind of curious to see another angle on the same part without giving anything away to those who haven't seen the play, of course. And I'll take my answer off the
air. Well, I personally feel that Dr. Bradman is a little bit of a threat to her, only because he doesn't really believe. You see, he's obviously a non-believer in our production. And he's going to send her up from time to time. And that's when she gets on her high horse and, you know, gives him her cold look, because she realizes that he could cause her some problems.
Mm-hmm.
So she stops him in his tracks quite early, takes the upper hand, and doesn't allow him to in any way take away from the seriousness of her approach to what she's doing.
And speaking of serious, what you call your last great movie role in the 60s in the film The Manchurian Candidate, which I have seen at least five times.
Gosh.
You were cast as the mother of an actor who is only 2 or 3 years younger than you. Let's hear a clip from the Manchurian Candidate.
What sort of a greeting is that at 3:30 in the morning?
It's 2:15, and what do you want?
I want to talk to you, Raymond.
About what?
I want to talk to you about that communist tart.
Shut up with that, Mother. Shut up.
You know what Jordan is? Are you out to crucify me? Are you out to crucify me?
I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't want to know. I'm going to bed.
Raymond, sit down. How would you see her? They live in New York.
I'm getting a job in New York.
You'll have your army service.
Next spring. I might be dead by next spring.
Raymond, if we were at war, and you were suddenly to become infatuated with the daughter of a Russian agent, wouldn't you expect me to come to you and object and beg you to stop the entire thing before it was too late? Well, we are at war. It's a cold war. But it will get worse and worse until every man, woman, and child in this country will have to stand up and be counted to say whether they are on the side of right and freedom or on the side of the Thomas Jordans of this country.
What a role.
Mm-hmm. What a role indeed.
How did you feel about doing that piece?
Oh, I relished the opportunity to say that role, because I knew that I had never played anything like it and probably never would again, which was true. And I loved working with John Frankenheimer, the director, because his approach was so full of absolute certainty about what he wanted to achieve, and his direction was so helpful and on the nose that I couldn't not respond in kind, and I give him full credit for my performance.
And you were only 37, and Lawrence Harvey was 35, and yet here you were playing his mother. How did you manage to find that in yourself with a man so close to your own age?
Well, how do you find it? It's right there in the words, in the script, in the story. This woman is a certain type of person, and it's as they say, it's acting, and you know, the thought of that woman and what she did and what she was, my God, it's pretty hair-raising that kind of individual was loose in society, but and that story is so unique and amazing that you have to sort of, I read the book, and I arrived well-equipped with knowledge about what the Dickens she was about. And then bringing her to the front of my consciousness was the tough part. That was the acting part. And with the help of John, I think we achieved it. And I've never done anything like it since, and I never will, because I don't think I could I couldn't repeat that kind of performance again. I wouldn't want to.
I wondered what it was like for you to leave your acting role on the days that you were shooting and go home and be a normal person. She personified a kind of evil that certainly is still alive and well in this world. But playing that kind of a person and then returning to, say, your family, your husband, what did that feel like?
Well, you know, most some actors take their roles home with them. We have a sort of saying in the business. One of them is that we leave ourselves at home when we go into the theater. We don't bring that person who just, you know, took the laundry out of the washer and put it in the dryer. And now we're going into the theater to become an entirely different individual on stage. This is true in movies. The same thing applies. One simply must not, if possible. Now, some actors are unable to leave themselves at home and become the character when they arrive at work. And they have a very troubled lives in many instances, and I really feel very sorry for them because I know how it's possible for it to happen that you bring yourself or you leave yourself. And in fact, we're not responsible always because we're all human beings and we're emotional, and sometimes we're playing a very emotional part, and we do take it home.
And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Angela, I know you lost your beloved husband, Peter Shaw. I gather he died in 2003. You had a very long marriage.
Indeed, we did. We had a marvelous marriage, which lasted for 53 years. And it sort of was a shock to me when I lost him, because I never think of age, and I didn't think of age where he was concerned, but in fact he was 85 when he died, and he lived a wonderful life and had a wonderful family, and he achieved a great deal in business and so on, and was an enormous help to me. I have to give him credit for being the person who really drove me in a way that enabled me to achieve what I have done in my career. It was him. So I was so willing to stay home, but he pushed me out of the house on many, many occasions and said, go do this. This is a great role. Go for it. And there you are.
And then you lost a dear friend last fall, Marianne Seldes.
Yes, Marianne, who brought me back to the stage with Deuce, a wonderful play by McNally. And she and I became dear, dear friends, lived around the corner from each other in New York. And I will be attending a lovely memorials service for, not a service, but shall we say a gathering at the at one of the great clubs in New York and in after Easter.
Joan sent us an email, and she's wondering, what's it like to work with Sondheim?
A challenging proposition. Not challenging, and he's the kindest, most careful, sensitive person when it comes to the work. If he believes in you, he lets you go for it your way. I've never had a word of dissension from him in all the years I've worked with him, and I will never ever take for granted our friendship. He's an extraordinary man and unique in every sense, and so enormously uniquely talented.
And one would certainly say that a view. Why do you believe, after all these years, you are fortunate enough and talented enough and beautiful enough to continue when so many other women have faded with age?
I can't really answer that question. It's you continue when you are invited and asked to participate in work, in playing roles, in coming back to theater, occasionally doing movies, although movies certainly are the least things I'm interested in right now. Mm-hmm. I'm really enormously interested in continuing to do theater.
Dame Angela Lansbury, British-American stage and screen actress. She's won 5 Tony Awards, an honorary Oscar, and 12 Emmy nominations for her role in Murder, She Wrote. What an honor to speak with you.
Thank you, Diane. It's been really a joy to just to, you know, throw it all out there and talk about things that I don't often get a chance to do. I appreciate so much your invitation to join you today. Thank you very, very much.
And thank you. And thanks all for listening. I'm Diane Rain.
Learning you were wrong. Certain as the sun.